Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Sinan Cidi is Executive Director of the Institute of Turkish Studies, and he's a visiting assistant professor of political science at Georgetown University. The South Dakota World Affairs Council sponsors a lecture with Dr. Cidi at the SDSU Research Park. That's 7 p.m. Central on August 2nd. The title of that lecture is Democracies in Decline, and he joins us now from Washington, D.C. on the phone with a preview. Dr. Cidi, welcome for being here.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and thank you for being here, I should say. We're looking forward to having you join us in South Dakota. And I think for many people who are listening right now, you know, they will have seen headlines about the coup in Turkey or about an American pastor who's being detained there. But that's so little to actually understand. There's so much more to talk about. So where do you want to begin, you know, as we sort of preview your lecture when you come to South Dakota? Where would you like to start?
That's a good question. I mean, it's often difficult trying to sort of generalize countries to talk about in terms of, you know, what one country's experiences in democratic decline may mean for the rest of democracies or the troubles faced by democracies in general. So I'm going to start a little bit by talking about the expansion of democracies in the post-World War II era and how political scientists were very optimistic that, particularly at the end of the Cold War, that liberal democratic governance would essentially spread following this collapse of the Soviet Union as a regime type. Mm-hmm. And whilst we saw some signs of that, certainly by the late 1990s, in the early 2000s, we've seen a pronounced decline in democratic standards in terms of rule of law, press freedoms, fairer or equal distribution of income, or access to jobs, all sort of different variables of what might be considered democratic governance. And so I'm going to start a little bit talking about that, and then go specifically into the Turkey case, which is not comparing sort of apples and oranges, but it's still sort of a good indicator of what sort of troubles democracies are facing around the world, particularly those that are less than what have been traditionally classified as liberal democracies. So the case of Turkey is one, but also in the European Union, you can sort of trace developments in countries such as Poland, Italy, Hungary, but also now increasingly worryingly in the case of the United States. What essentially awaits us in terms of democratic governance and why we should be concerned?
It's not something we can take for granted.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the problems of democratic governance.
Right.
In terms of you know, how we have developed as a country in the post-World War era or post-1945 era, it's something that we have taken for granted since subsequent generations have.
Right.
I think the boomer generation was the most adept at understanding the intrinsic value of our freedoms and you know, the cost that was paid or the costs that were paid during World War II. Now, what the problem seems to be is we built these wonderful global institutions or domestic institutions. We've expanded, you know, safeguards and checks and balances against the abuse of power, both domestically and internationally, so we don't, experience some of the horrors that we saw across Europe. And also the challenges that we faced in this country, whether it be civil rights or race relations or whatever, right? So, but the problem is, I think the crux of the problem is, we've never had to sort of, or we've never been successful at explaining why these are worth maintaining to subsequent generations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big lack of understanding of, I would call, the present up-and-coming generations as to why, for example, it's worth preserving the independence of rule of law and the court system or the judiciary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why politicization is bad. A lot of that is taken for granted, and we can have a conversation about that, but it's not really self-evident to the younger generations why that's worth preserving. And that's something that we as societies, not just in the United States, but across the world, I think, that have benefited from democratic governance have failed. Mm.
What has happened in Turkey just this year with the snap elections and, you know, some of the more recent events that should be something that Americans are paying attention to?
So the case of Turkey in the last year, I would say the last 2 years, particularly yeah. since the attempted coup to overthrow the elected government of Turkey, right? In terms of democratic retrogression or backsliding, what has happened is that the best sort of analogy I can give is, it's a rather crude one, but it kind of serves the purpose. Slow boiling a frog in right. terms of, you know, the frog doesn't essentially know it's being boiled until it's too late. You know, and the Erdogan administration, or as I tend to call it now, the Erdogan regime now in Turkey, has slowly consolidated executive, legislative, as well as judicial power into essentially one single hand, and that is the hand of President Erdogan himself, and stifled any sort of administrative or government or judicial independence that was previously there, not in abundant, not in terms of what here, but still somewhere where, you know, Turks were relatively free to debate issues of the day, even contentious ones. And he has basically taken all that away in terms of press freedoms, a dissenting press, replacing judges that were critical or threatening towards his interests or his government's interests, and essentially built a system of governance that's replaced the parliamentary system with what he has called an executive presidency, which means he alone can legislate, he alone can appoint judges to the highest courts without any confirmation processes whatsoever. And he's largely achieved that during a state of emergency. So Turkey right now, under a variety of indicators, is anything but less than a democracy.
What sort of led to the ability to that happen, taking place? Are there markers that you can look back and say, you know, this was the decline of, or the backsliding of one institution. This is what happened in the press and how things were handled. This is, you know, what was happening from a technological standpoint. Are there markers that you can look at that, or is this one man who has just been, you know, very skilled at manipulating a system to his own benefit?
So there's a variety of factors, I think, and all are telltale signs that a variety of audiences can take heed from or notice of.
Yeah.
One of them is public apathy. Mm. You know, the more active, politically active or concerned part of the population have always basically been concerned about what Erdogan is interested in doing. But what Erdogan took in terms of curtailing press freedoms or limiting individual rights of association and protest, these were done very incrementally, not in one big mass chunk that would have, you know, resulted in mass outcry, I would think. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say is, other than public apathy, is, legal changes as they presented themselves. So to the extent that Erdogan felt that his political role was under threat due to, you know, prosecution of himself, his family for accusations of corruption or whatever, or the court system wanting to essentially shut his government down for abuse of power, Erdogan has essentially, you know, taken measures that that have basically chipped away at the rule of law. The other thing, the huge catalyst, I think, is two big catalysts. One, the public protests of 2013, which was the first and only, I think, mass outcry or public outcry against Erdogan's abuse of power, which was heavily suppressed by brutal means, but also the coup attempt, I think, is something, you know, that Erdogan called a gift from God, because the fallout from that, he implemented under constitutional power a state of emergency, which suspended civil rights, press freedoms. You know, it suspended the ability of companies to conduct strikes or lockouts or whatever, and really has used that in the last year to craft a political system to his own personal desire. And at each stage, following brutal crackdowns, the public has been more and more meek. And what we had this year just gone in the end of June, June 24, we had the elections. Basically, the only institution of check trying to check Erdogan was, you know, not voting him in as for another five-year term. And there are heavy allegations of voter intimidation, manipulation of the result, not just by Turkish authorities, but independent non-governmental organizations, European entities such as the Organization for Security and Cooperation of Europe, which is calling the question the validity of the result. In essence, even, you know, voting him out of power has not been an option because he has co-opted all the institutions which are supposed to be independent, such as the Board of Elections, which was staffed by loyalists. So there are a variety of factors. And the most important thing is this has taken time. This hasn't happened overnight. This has been a process of about 10 years, but most stringent, you know, stridently in the last 5 years, I would say, that is really, you know, sort of packed on. And I think a lot of the public apathy in the initial years of sort of strength tightening of grips of power was based on economic success of Turkey. To the extent that Turks felt, you know, economically better off, the less they were inclined to question Erdogan's sort of motivations for what he did.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest, Dr. Sinan Jidi, and he's coming to South Dakota on August 2nd for a talk at South Dakota State University. Dr. Jidi, we need to take a quick break. I'm hoping you'll just sit tight for a moment. When we come back, we'll have more with Dr. Jidi. Stay in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. My guest today, Dr. Sinan Jidi. He is Executive Director of the Institute of Turkish Studies and Visiting Assistant Professor of Political Science at Georgetown. South Dakota World Affairs Council brings him to the state August 2nd at 7 p.m. in Brookings at SDSU's Research Park. And we're talking about the declining democracies. We're talking about Turkey. We're talking about American democracy. So many things sort of playing into this conversation. Dr. Jidi, let's start with this notion of why it seems obvious to say why we care, but I guess what I'm wondering is the influence of this current regime in Turkey and how that is influencing the European Union, how that is influencing, you know, the United States at this point when our relationships between Turkey and NATO ally. Give us an idea of how much this matters and why.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for strongmen like Erdogan, particularly, or Viktor Orban in Hungary, or Italy's new prime minister, I think what they're sort of starting to see is they can tap into various forms of dissent, public dissent or anger at a variety of factors, such as increased unemployment or the financial crisis or the anger that's ensued from that. That it's time to sort of, you know, close the country's borders and, you know, take care of number one, or this is in their sort of own view, and that using rhetoric that is divisive, that is inflammatory, that is, you know, targeted at basically using binaries to build, you know, solid political bases, is something that, you know, has paid off. In the case of Turkey, Erdogan has made great amount of political capital by, for example, the issue of ethnic divisions in Turkey or strife. So to the extent that, you know, he has been willing to demonize and only treat Turkey's largest Kurdish minority as a security issue, a threat that has been presented as one of terrorism, as opposed to, you know, a democratic deficit issue, which has to be overcome through reforms and accommodation of minority rights. He has, you know, capitalized upon that politically in the ballot box to the extent that he says, you know, if you vote for Kurdish parties or if you allow Kurdish politicians to get into parliament, you're essentially giving terrorism a pass. And it resounds with the public. And also brinksmanship on the international stage, to the extent that Erdogan has basically vilified his European partners. You know, don't forget that Turkey has been an accession country to the European Union since 2005, a process which has stalled. But Erdogan has made a wonderful amount of political capital by, you know, verbally demeaning European authorities, governments, individual leaders, as well as European institutions, saying, you know, European countries or the European Union is behaving like Nazis against Turkey, that, you know, they are Islamophobic. And essentially, if they don't want us, then we'll go our own way. But we will also, you know, not prevent, the tide of Syrian refugees that may cross into Europe, something which is Turkey has been preventing in return for, you know, European cash payments. But that kind of, you know, anti-European or anti-Western rhetoric, which is also now touched upon the United States by Erdogan, mm-hmm. is allowing him to maintain a solid sort of electoral sort of fortune. And that is a common feature that we have seen across a lot of political administrations across the globe, because it pays right. for the now. Our listeners probably can hear tones of this at home too.
And that's my question. Before we run out of time, I want to ask that question for people who are listening and are thinking about the current state of American democracy and seeing some shadows and some familiarities in some of this conversation. What's your message there?
My message is this: I've been in the United States 10 years now, and previously I lived in Turkey as an adult for 5 years. I was born there. I was, to a certain extent raised there, but I also grew, my main sort of place of growing up is in the United Kingdom. What I would say is this, we have a naive sense of optimism in this country that things will just work out.
Right.
My strong sense is they just won't work out. It's not the way this is. The notion that this is America will be fine, I don't think will carry weight. This is the same perspective that the British have with respect to their, post-Brexit sort of woes. They're about to experience, the business end of what I would call a very nasty economic shock after the United Kingdom basically falls out of the European Union, because without the EU, the UK will be nothing. In Turkey, I have seen, again, we're comparing fruits. United States and Turkish democracies are not the same thing. They're very far apart in terms of standards, but we're still comparing fruit. What my message would be to say is I have seen how a democracy gets chipped away at and heavily sort of beaten down. It's taken 10 years in Turkey to a particular level. There are signs of that that can be visibly traced in the United States. Public apathy and lack of attention, just because the stock market and the economy is doing well now, doesn't bode well, it's a little concerning.
Dr. Jeedi, so much that you have given us to think about. We really appreciate that and your time. The title of the lecture is Democracies in Decline. South Dakota World Affairs Council sponsors that lecture with Dr. Jeedi at SDSU Research Park. That's coming up August 2nd at 7 p.m. Travel safely to South Dakota. We look forward to being able to be in the audience and folks asking you questions and hearing more of what you have to say. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.